Welcome to this week's episode of Baseball Family. Today we have the Culture Club voting on the Hall of Fame. The Mariners made a big trade, and we'll go through the Brewers' Mount Rushmore right now.
Nine Plus Us presents the Baseball Together podcast with your hosts, Blackjack Brad and Kansas City Little Big Briggy Blue Eyes. And now, Baseball Together.
Welcome, baseball family, to this week's episode of the Baseball Together podcast. I am Brad, and I'm going to be captaining this ship today with my co-pilot, Brig. How are you this evening?
Man, I got the church giggles there a little bit, but I'm feeling much better now.
You did, and it was contagious. Yeah, I was a little worried that this was going to get off the rails real quick tonight, but it still might. We'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
Oh, no. Okay, anyway, so the first thing, good news, Brig, 113 days till opening day. It's even less, 7 days less than that if you're a Padres and Dodgers fan. But we're getting there. It's coming rapidly, much more quickly than we thought.
So
the next thing we have, a very interesting thing, and I cannot wait to get your opinion on this, Brig. The Culture Club.
Yeah.
The current, or the what was it, the Today's Era committee, or I can't remember what it's called. I didn't write it down. Anyway, we call them the Culture Club.
Yeah,
they voted on their ballot for the Hall of Fame this weekend, on Sunday, in fact, and they got one guy in. Jim Leland was the only one who made it. Lou Piniella was one vote shy of making it in. I'm sure you can assume that I think this is a travesty, in my opinion, a crime. I'm assuming what happened was somebody was like, oh, Piniella's going to get in. I'll give one of my votes to somebody else, which you shouldn't do in case this happens.
Right.
You got to get them in, get their votes. Now Lou Piniella is not getting in the Hall of Fame.
Ever.
Ever.
This was it.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Brick? Do you think, like, are you with me on this, that it is an absolute crime that he didn't get in, despite his resume?
I don't think it's a crime in the absolute.
Somebody needs to be arrested. Lashings.
Lashings. Strapped to the mainmast.
That's right.
Yeah. Flogged. No. I don't feel as strongly about it as you do. Certainly not. I'm more happy for Leland than I am sad about Piniella. How does that sound?
Okay. All right. And I think we both agreed that these were the two guys who were going to get in at the time when this was first released. But I saw Leland got in yesterday, so I was like, so what about Lou Piniella? Like,
yeah.
No. How many votes did he get in by? Who voted, like? But then when I saw that he missed by one vote, I was like physically angry about it.
Yeah.
Which is not something I should care that deeply about, but for some reason I did.
Well, it's so sad to lose. I always say I would rather lose by 10 runs than get beat out by a walk that with the bases loaded. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'd rather get annihilated. For sure. I don't want to lose by this much. It's just harder.
You can process it earlier, and it's easier to process. Like, well, just weren't good enough today. Rather than, this could have gone right. This could have, unreal. But anyway, I don't want to take away from Jim Leland. Congratulations to that guy. Obviously, a fantastic manager, had a great career in Major League Baseball as a manager.
For sure.
Winter meetings going on this week. So crazy. Things got started pretty quick on Sunday night. The Mariners made a big deal with the Braves. Bro. 5-player deal. The Mariners sent Jared Kelnick, Marco Gonzalez, and Evan White to the Braves for right-hand pitcher Jackson Coware. I know it's Coware. I don't know where the emphasis is. I think it's Coware. Anyway. And pitching prospect Cole Phillips. He pitched in the complex league this year.
Right.
So the Mariners add more pitchers. More pitchers, Brig.
Yeah.
To their roster, which is already overloaded with pitchers. Yep. Not just their 40-man, but their minor league system. It's bursting at the seam with pitchers.
Okay.
And granted, Cole Phillips is no scrub. He was number 7 in the Braves pipeline. But the thing that's funny is that now that he's in the Mariners pipeline, MLB.com has him ranked number 15 in the Mariners pipeline.
Wow.
So I don't know. So first things first, this is a salary dump. Jeff Passan said it, and this is the very first thing I thought of, was this is a salary dump. 100% salary dump. Yeah. But I have some more thoughts on this. Now, I'll tell you first why it's a salary dump. Jared Kelenic, first off, is pre-arbitration. He's still on a rookie deal.
Yeah.
He's cheap. Helps to declutter the outfield a little bit for the Mariners because there's a lot going on there. And it also removes a volatile personality from the clubhouse. Granted, his kicking the water cooler and breaking his foot sparked the rest of the team to go on a run. Now, is it because he wasn't around, or is it because he finally showed this team that it's cool to care? You know,
I don't know.
The jury is still out. The jury is still out on that. That they were rallying around their injured compadre, or they're like, he's gone, let's go win. Like, sweet, I don't know. Man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. But this is where the money comes in. Evan White was due $7 million in 2024, or is due $7 million. He's under contract through 2025 with team options through 2028 with $4 million in buyouts between 26, 27, and 28. This guy, Brig, has played only 84 games at the major league level.
I was going to say, none of that makes any sense.
They had that much money tied up in him because they bought out his arbitration before he made his major league debut.
Yeah.
So they had a ton of money tied up in Evan White, who, granted, is a gold glover, but he's also got a glass body. The dude cannot stay healthy. He didn't play
at all. And he's going to play behind Matt Olson? Like, what is going on?
I think what it is he's still young, so it gives him an opportunity to get healthy. No pressure to get healthy because the Mariners kind of had a little bit of pressure on him, especially this year.
Yeah.
Because, France didn't have a good year.
No, he didn't.
We could use a little bit more competition at first base, but he just doesn't stay healthy. He's had this hip issue that's lingered for a year and a half.
Yep.
So that's a problem. Then Marco Gonzalez, who is a veteran, he's due $12.25 million in 2024 with a $15 million team option in 25. Yep. So they had the opportunity to have a good number five starter on their rotation for relatively cheap. But at the same time, I've also seen that they don't plan on keeping him, that they're planning on dealing him to somebody. So, but again, if you send him somewhere like the Reds, he'd probably be a solid number four.
Yeah.
Right.
So, or St. Louis right now.
St. Louis is pretty loaded up.
Are they?
I don't know if St. Louis would want him back. He came from St. Louis originally to Seattle.
But
one thing that does do for the Mariners, though, is it declutters the pitching rotation, the starting rotation, because you've got Castillo, Gilbert, Kirby, Miller, and either Wu or Hancock. There's six guys right there. Plus, you've got Robbie Ray coming back halfway through the season.
Right.
So there's seven guys for five spots. So it helps with that. Here are the problems that I have with this, Brig. First off, Kuwer has a career war of -2.6.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a back-end low-leverage receiver. I don't know. Maybe they're planning on getting rid of him. Maybe they're planning on DFAing him, or they're planning on dealing him as well.
Yeah, trade chip.
I talked about Phillips. He was the number 7 prospect in Atlanta. He's currently number 15 in Seattle. That's fine. Hold on to him. He's basically free at this point, right?
Right. Or a good trade chip.
And this is the thing. This whole trade is one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. One, it's either a domino.
Yep.
And Jerry DePoto is getting ready to make a big trade and land that whale of a bat, right? They talked about going into this offseason. We need to get a bat. We need to get an impact bat. Yeah, but you just keep getting pitchers.
Yeah.
Those guys can hit.
Figure it out. Yeah. They're not even allowed to anymore. Not just that they can't.
Yeah, exactly. The only other option, Brig, is if this is not a domino, this is tanking.
Yeah, it's true.
Shedding a bunch of payroll to come in as cheap as you can and make as much money this season. Yeah. And I don't know what the point of that would be.
So this was a conversation topic at the bus stop today. We're all sitting there we're like, what is happening? It was hilarious. But yeah, I think that I think this is a payroll dump. I think this shores up funding for potential big money purchase.
It ought to.
It has to. And the team is too good and is well constructed enough to continue pushing. If they're tanking right now, then they know something we don't, or there's no reason to have faith in Seattle.
Exactly right. That's how I feel about it too. And I was texting our buddy Jewel about this, obviously, yep. Mariners fan as well. And I said, it feels like you don't make this deal unless something is like all but done.
Right.
Right. Unless you're like,
they know something we don't.
They have to. But this is the thing. At this point, Brig, at this time of this recording, it's been 24 hours.
Yeah.
You are in the same room as the people you're making deals with. It shouldn't take that much longer. If you're like, yeah, hold on, let me go make a deal real quick. I'll be right back. Like, what happened when he walked across the room and made the deal with the Braves, or he didn't have something lined up, and Jerry DePoto and John Hollander,
right?
They don't know what they're doing,
or they muffed it bad.
Yeah.
Could have been a double cross, could have been, who knows, but
I don't know. All I know is that when it happened, I was like, okay, something is about to happen. But the longer we get removed from this, I'm like, I don't know if anything's going to happen.
Yeah.
It has to, but I don't know if it's going to.
Okay, that's on the Seattle side. But on the Atlanta side, it's just as interesting because it's like, why?
So,
and I get some of the justification, but the problem is like, anyway, go ahead. Say what you're going
to
say.
So here's this. One thing is the Braves are getting Jared Kelnick, who is supposed to have a really high ceiling. And I think he still has a really high ceiling. I think he can still be a great player. Yeah. I think, though, he gets into a veteran clubhouse, guys who are not afraid to put him in his place.
Yeah.
And I think if it gets to the point where he's having an attitude problem, it sets straight really quick. And yeah. I think I've thought for a while he needs a change of scenery. I liked having him on the Mariners because his highs are really high. We saw at the beginning of the 2023 season. His highs are outstanding, but his lows are also really low, and it feels like it's contagious. And I feel like in Atlanta, they can take advantage of those highs, and those lows won't be contagious at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And I remember it was going into the 2023 season, and about halfway through, Jewel and I were like, maybe he just needs to change the scenery. I think that's all it needs to be, is that will benefit him more than anybody else. Just go somewhere else. And because he doesn't like the front office, he posted on Instagram and he said, did you see? Well, first, like when he was in AAA, he erased everything Mariners from his Instagram.
I thought that's what you were going to say.
Oh, no. But today he posted on Instagram. He said, thank you. He thanked the fans. He thanked his teammates. And and he thanked God. He did not thank the Mariners organization. So he
no
has
organizational love.
No love for that front office. And I don't blame him, because they kept him in the minors for a long time.
Really interesting.
Longer than a lot of us thought he should have been. And I wonder if that did something mentally to him and why he struggled so much. But anyway,
very possible.
So I think a change of scenery is going to do him really well. And he's going to, I think he has a potential to be an all-star in Atlanta.
Yeah. Or he's just another trade piece because Atlanta doesn't need him. They just don't.
Yeah, you're right. He's a cheap, really good bat, though. Could be a really good bat. And I could see with what they did to that lineup this year, like,
yeah,
something happened in the offseason with that team. Sure. They were good offensively, but they were great offensively this year. Something happened, and I could see something happening to Jared Kelnick getting into that clubhouse and working with whoever they have working with their players and just going off.
Because they're good. Whoever's doing it is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully it wasn't Ron Washington. He gone. So
he's their defensive guy. So
that's right. Yeah.
I do still think that the Braves got worse the day they lost him.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
His life got better though, but not
definitely
probably not by much.
Given the situation he went into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Now let's stay in the NL East for just a minute.
Okay.
The Marlins hired Gabe Kapler as their assistant general manager.
They sure did.
I thought that was fascinating. He's going to work directly beneath President of Baseball Operations, Peter Bendix. His main role will be with player development, but he'll also be involved in all areas of baseball operations. Brig, do you think that the front office is a better fit for Kapler, or is he better in the dugout?
I mean, I don't know. The honest answer is I don't know. We haven't seen him in the front office, so it'll be interesting to see.
Not in any significant role.
Yeah. Right, maybe. I don't know. I think what we know about Kapler is he, based on the evidence, this is inductive reasoning, right? Okay. But he clearly has to be a great baseball mind at some level, right? Or nobody would keep him around.
Right.
He's got to be a great influence guy one way or the other, or nobody would keep him around. He's got to be a team player and willing to toe the party line, but also has just enough influence and say and speaks his mind enough. He's got to have all the tools that it's required, but he's got to have a great baseball mind or people would kick him out. The only reason to sustain this much, to have this much like lack of success, I guess, be this consistently almost good, is that you just have to be a terrific thinker.
Yeah. Yeah. And he clearly sees something that other people don't, which, you know, sets him apart from other people, other managers, other, I guess, assistant GMs now.
Yeah.
Right. I think you're right, though, about having a great baseball mind. And, you know, there are a lot of guys who manage who do, but they don't.
Sure.
You know, it's like, yeah, they understand the game, but they don't have that ultra high baseball IQ. I feel like Gabe Kapler has that because he had some success in San Francisco. He had good teams like this year, down year, whatever. And we talked about 2 years ago, that was a fluke, but it's always a fluke when you win that many games. You have some bounces that go your way. Yeah.
His track record is just, it's almost really good, right? It's just under, like, I don't know what he needs, but it's not there. Whatever it is, it's just not there.
Yeah.
And so maybe switching it up to the front office is the right answer because he clearly brings a lot to the table or people wouldn't keep hiring him.
One thing that is interesting to me about this, though, is going to the Marlins. I watched a video where it was Foul Territory podcast. They were talking to, I believe it was a Marlins reporter or somebody who had the inside scoop on the Kim Ng departure.
Yeah.
And basically she left because it was a toxic work environment.
Right.
And so I wonder what kind of people they're looking for to fill roles so that it's not toxic.
Or
is it just generally toxic?
And does he fit well into that?
Yeah.
And is that the problem he's had elsewhere, is that he brings a level of toxicity that doesn't overflow into everything, but it's their brand of toxic and that's what they want. So they went and found him. I don't know. Could be.
Could be.
Yeah. Here's the other thing you got to remember about Gabe Kapler in Miami. And this, I think, is where it was what it all comes down to.
There's a lot of coconut oil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I was going to say. Here you go. That's exactly. The sun is hot. There's coconut oil, and he's getting paid to be there. So, ain't no thing.
Yeah. All right. Staying in the NL East just for a little bit longer. Philly Rob Thompson got a contract extension through 2025. He's previously set to expire after the 24 season. So he got one more year.
Yeah.
Do you think that's like it for him there if they don't win a World Series?
Totally.
It's got to be, right? That they're like giving him a hard deadline to win a World Series, give him two more years.
Yep. 100%.
I don't feel like there's any reason that team shouldn't be in the World Series. Granted,
their competition.
The Kyle Schwarber leadoff experiment is odd, has always been odd to me.
It's working a lot, though.
Until it doesn't, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's crazy.
Right.
But is when it works. Yeah, it's working really well, but when it doesn't work.
It's like 60% of the time it works every time, though.
That's whatever. Right. Exactly. Right.
That's good enough in baseball.
It is. That's Hall of Fame numbers in baseball.
Yeah, that's right. I'm saying. Yeah. Do you see that thing about him and Ichiro's OPS plus being exactly the same right now? And their batting averages are on like way either sides of town. Yeah. I was like, holy crap.
You get enough ones, it's going to equal 10 fours. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's how that works out, folks.
That's exactly right. 10 fours.
Amazing. Oh, man. I love, fabulous. I love that stat. Weird stats in baseball.
So funny.
Okay. The 2022 KBO MVP, Junghoo Lee, is officially coming over from the KBO to Major League Baseball. He was posted on Monday, and he has 30 days to sign with the team after his negotiating window opens on Tuesday at 8 a.m. Eastern time. Now, Brig, it's interesting because I was going through a bunch of our old videos and stuff, and last year we were talking about Junghoo Lee possibly coming over, but he didn't. He spent one more year in the KBO. Yeah. He only played 86 games this year. I don't know if it was an injury or what, but he didn't have as big of a year as he did as big of a year as he did in 2022. First off, he's an outfielder. He's 25 years old. He's still really young.
Oh yeah,
for sure. This is a perfect time for him to come over. But in 2022, he played 142 games where he slashed .349, .421, and a whopping .575. With 23 homers and drove in 113 RBIs. Apparently, the top suitors for him are the Padres, Giants, and your New York Yankees.
Oh, you don't say.
Of course. Of course. Do you think you could use Junghoo Lee in the outfield there? Probably.
Well, you got to figure there's developmental time. So his arrival and his on-the-field opportunities might not coincide. They might not be the same thing.
You don't think so?
I said might, Brad. I don't know. It just depends. But there is room there for him. There is a place for him to find a spot and carve himself out some play time, for sure. Do we need it? I don't know. I don't know. Are we going to get rid of Stanton? That would answer some of those questions. But it's never going to happen. Because they're stupid. Talk about a guy needs a change of scenery. You think Jared Kelnick needs a change of scenery? Giancarlo Stanton has needed a change of scenery since the day he left Miami. Whew. Never mind. I better go to bed.
So this is my thing with this, Brig, is that I don't think he's going to go anywhere that's not going to guarantee him playing time day one.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because granted, so we talked about this way back in 2020 when we did our KBO primer, right, when that was the only baseball we were able to watch.
Yeah, right.
That the talent level of the KBO is basically between AA and AAA, which
is great.
I understand, like, it's AA is where your top prospects are and AAA is where your veterans go, right? So if you're still playing professional ball and putting up those kind of numbers as an MVP,
for sure
you're a really good player. He's got a real shot to have a lot of success in Major League Baseball. I just want him to go to somewhere that fits, where he can be successful.
Here's the thing. The Yankees want Juan Soto something fierce, right? That's all the talk. That's all anybody cares about.
Not bad enough. They're not willing to give up prospects for him.
Well, they want the kitchen sink, Brad.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
They don't just want the kitchen sink. They want the plumbing and the tile, and they want you to pull the grout out with your teeth. That's what they want. It's a huge problem. Okay, so those kids in San Diego who want to take their ball and go home if we don't want to play four square can need to just figure out that there are four squares, okay? Now, here's the other thing. Let's say Juan Soto does move over to New York. Let's just say. Then who has a great chance of playing in San Diego? Getting day one game time, getting tons of love. It's a clean fit. It's a great climate. It's a great fan base. All that. It's lower pressure. It's, you know, he's behind some terrific names like Tatis Jr. and everybody else. You know what I'm saying? I think San Diego is a great fit, but they don't have room for him right now. But if they can get rid of Soto, make room,
apparently,
it'll be all right.
Apparently Tatis is back playing shortstop in the Dominican Winter League.
Oh, interesting.
And so it sounds like he might be making the move back. I don't know if the Padres are going to move him back, but it seems like that's what he wants.
Yeah. Well, and they're putting Bogarts at second, right? And they're talking about moving
him
back.
Yeah.
So hey, here you go. The puzzle pieces are fitting together all of a sudden.
They are. And there's a good chance Soto is gone. So you could You could have two outfield spots open.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah, yes, San Diego is where he should, that's where he goes if the cards are, you know, stars and cards and whatever's aligning with the chi. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I think Mercury is in retrograde, so I think it works out that way.
Okay. Yeah. It's fabulous. I'll do a flop later to throw some bones or something.
There you go. Perfect. Let's talk about the draft lottery because I am in love with the draft lottery break. It is one of my favorite things about the NBA is the fact they do a draft lottery to help curb tanking. It doesn't work 100%, but it helps.
No. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Because there's no way to get rid of tanking 100%. But it helps. So first things first, the draft will be in Arlington, Texas, in conjunction with the All-Star Game and the associated festivities in July of 2024.
Yeah.
But the way this works is the first six picks of the draft will be determined by lottery picks. The lottery is happening, as if you're watching this first day of release, tonight, December the 5th. Okay. And we have the odds of the 17 teams that are eligible for the draft lottery. And this is fascinating before we get to that, because yes, there are 18 teams that missed the playoffs, but only 17 are eligible for the lottery because the Nationals are not eligible for the draft, according to the current
collective bargaining agreement. Right.
It's amazing. So
here's the deal. Ahead. They're not allowed. So the Washington have finished in last place in the National League, not just the division, but in the National League, they have been last place every season since 2019. Okay, which makes them an automatic qualifier for the lottery, the draft lottery, except for, according to the new collective bargaining agreement, the Nationals are not allowed to pick any higher than 10th. In this 2024 draft lottery due to the size of the DC market under the MLB's revenue sharing plan. So the market, it's too big a market for them to qualify, even though they have been at the bottom of the barrel for years.
Basically
now.
What they're saying is you have a bunch of money, spend it and get yourself a good team without drafting a prospect. But these other teams that don't have all the money from TV and whatever else, let them have the prospects. You go spend your money on a good player.
Yeah.
I think
so. It's an anti-tanking policy incentive is what's going on here. But the Nationals still have been, like I said, they finished last place since 2019.
And Brig, they just traded away their best player this year, so they don't seem to be heading in any positive trajectory anytime soon.
Dude, when they got rid of Candelario, I was like, what? What is happening? So you don't care? You're waiting for the second coming of Walter Johnson, or what's happening here?
That's the thing that's crazy is like, okay, you've got your guy, build around him, right? Like,
yeah, man.
I don't know, man. I did a lot of looking on this because I just wanted to make sure I was reading that right. And they did draft a kid last year who's supposed to be like the next big thing in Washington, but they drafted him last year. So they have a couple years before he's going to make his debut, unless they treat him like every other Nationals prospect, and we see him this year, right?
Yep. And then we see him again in different colors next year.
Yeah, we probably will. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they got the number two pick last year, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the kid. His Cruz. His last name's Cruz. I can't remember his first name. But yeah, we could see him in the bigs in 2024. Yeah, you're right. He'd be wearing a different uniform in 2025.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah.
Here's the dates on the lottery. So the odds, because it's a lottery, right? So they're going to like drop a ball, but you get a certain number.
I love the ping pong balls, Brig.
The ping pong balls. It's easy. Every team has a certain number of ping pong balls based on how terrible they were. Okay. There are three teams tied for the most terrible. Okay. That's the Athletics, the Royals, the Rockies. They all each have an 18.3% chance of getting that first, you know, of their ball coming up in the lottery. Okay.
You'll get in the first pick. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then you've got the White Sox at 14.7%, Cardinals 8.3%, Angels 6.1%. Everybody else is above 5%. You've got the Mets, Pirates. Oh, below. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. they have a sub 5% chance of their ball being pulled for the number one draft. It's Pirates, Guardians, Tigers, Red Sox, Giants, Reds, Padres, Yankees, Cubs, Mariners, and it would have been the Nationals, but no.
The Mariners had the lowest shot at 0.2%.
Yeah.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. The Yankees are in there at 0.6%. The Cubs at 0.4%. So, man.
Hey, now.
You're an all-star.
It's happened before. Yes. I'm telling you, man, this is what I love about the lottery is you get ready, you get your lucky rabbit's foot, whatever you need, sit in your spot on the couch. And I love watching the draft lottery in the NBA. It's a good time.
So interesting, dude.
So
it's so interesting.
I would love it if it was like the Padres, Yankees, Cubs, and Mariners were like the top four in whatever order. And yeah. Then it's like the Athletics, the Royals, and the Rockies are sitting outside of six.
They're at the
Justice.
They're at the 20th round. You know, they finally make it. They finally get a pick. Oh, man. The draft lottery, though, does dictate, I think, the first two rounds up to 20 picks or something like that.
Well, I think it just determines the entire order of the draft. And then
you slot in
picks and whatever round and stuff like that. So
I did more looking into it, just like you said you did, and I can't remember all the details. It just
determines the draft order, and yeah. it's not like fantasy where it's a snake draft. So yeah, it's one through 30, and then the lottery will determine 1 through 6, and then they'll just fill in after that.
Yeah, after that, yeah.
Fascinating. It'll be, like I said, it'll be a lot of fun. Okay, last thing we have before we get into the Brewers Mount Rushmore. This is going to be our last current event segment until the second week, Brig? Third week of January.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, because we're taking some time off. Next week, there will not be an episode. Zero episode. So don't worry, you didn't miss anything. We're taking a week off.
Yeah, correct.
And then everything else is going to be recorded. So I thought it would be fun if we locked in our predictions for Shohei Ohtani's free agency, because next time we come on, he should be with a team, because it sounds like it's going to happen within a couple days. So we're going to write this future headline today. Where does Shohei Ohtani end up, Brig? I have been just on pins and needles since you teased me with this thing before we started. It's where the church giggles came from.
This is where the church giggles came from. Now, I did a bunch of research to back up these six words. Okay. Is way too much research, because I also have the first line of my inverted, you know.
Yeah, sign. Yeah.
So my lead, I didn't bury it. Okay, Brad.
Excellent. Very good.
All right. Here's my headline. Metro Dog, which is a business. Metro Dog welcomes newest beagle pup via SeattleDogSpot.com.
Oh, wow. So SeattleDogSpot.com is your that's blogger who's writing about that's this?
It's not a blogger. Okay. It's an actual website. Go to SeattleDogSpot.com. And they are producing information. Before the world knows that Shohei Ohtani signs in Seattle, they know that they are going to be taking care of Mollert, the beagle, for the road series.
Amazing.
For road trips.
Yeah.
Metro Dog. It's an actual business that does boarding for dogs in Seattle.
I hope it comes true, Brick.
I do too. I don't know if it will. They have a better chance. I think the Nationals have a better chance of winning the draft lottery than Seattle does of landing Ohtani. But I still want it to happen.
At this point, I think that you're right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay. My headline is From Angel to Demon. Ooh. Ohtani to Chavez Ravine. And this is coming from the Orange County Register.
Yeah, it is.
The newspaper that covers the Angels like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Very upset that Ohtani's going to LA. Going to the other side.
Angel to Demon.
Going to the Dodgers.
Bro, that's a great headline. Jim would be proud.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. We should toss one up for Jim really quick. Ready?
There we go.
Jim's the man.
Jim is the man. Yeah, that was one of my favorite jobs when I was a sports editor in college. Was like, if I had a writer who's like, I'm having a hard time coming up with a with a headline, I would typically resort to song lyrics, movie lines, and books. So
that's awesome. Yeah,
that was one of my favorite parts of that job. But anyway, all right. So Brig, you've got Seattle going, or Ohtani to Seattle. You're locking in your prediction. Mine is Ohtani to the Dodgers.
Meaningless prediction.
That's
so
right.
Fun.
Baseball family, let us know where you think before he comes, before he makes his announcement in the next, like I said, it's supposed to be in the next week. I don't know.
It should be very soon. Yeah. And if it's wild and crazy, we might just have to come back on and do a little, you know, jibber jabber about it or something. We'll see. But
yeah, we'll see.
Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe we'll let it sit and simmer.
Anyway. Who knows? But before we take a break, baseball family, we're always asking what you think about the topics we bring up on the show. Now you have a quick and easy way to do it. We partnered with Versus Game to bring you games where you can make money from participating in polls, trivia, and predictions. So if you're on the winning side of a poll or get a trivia question right or get a prediction right, you can win actual prizes every month. Play for free for plenty of opportunities to earn and win prizes, like I said, every single week. So you can go head-to-head at btpod.com. So, sorry, btpod.onversus.com on your mobile browser to sign up and play polls and trivia games. That's btpod.onversus.com to sign up and play Versus Game with us. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we will be going through the Brewers Mount Rushmore.
Baseball family, welcome back. We are excited, very, very excited to talk about this topic. To talk about this, for whatever reason, that sounded weird in my head, but that doesn't take away from the fact that we are still very excited to be here and to talk to you about the Milwaukee Brewers Mount Rushmore. Brad and I, for those of you that don't know, who haven't watched any of our Mount Rushmore videos before, we have been moving through each franchise and determining who are the four names you cannot tell the franchise history without mentioning. You have to have these four people. And without them, it doesn't work. So the couple of the rules of the game, Brad and I do not collaborate. We don't commiserate. And we don't corroborate anything between the two of us. We build our lists independently, and we very often overlap on at least one, sometimes more than one, and one time
I think it's
going to
be
tight.
That's true. I honestly think this one's going to have like the majority of it overlap, because I feel like a franchise like the Brewers is, I don't know if transient is the right word, but I don't feel like it's one of those places where guys stick around. Like, we kind of had a problem with that with like the Angels. Remember going back to that one, be like, man, nobody spends more than like 4 years here except for like Tim Salmon, you know,
right?
Mike Trout. So I feel like this is one of those ones that's a lot like that. Like, I'll be honest with you, I was looking at Christian Yelich,
but
he spent half his career there. Is all granted, it took off, but I don't think he spent enough time there to be part of the story of the Brewers and had great enough years to be part of the story. So
100%,
it's kind of one of those things with this franchise.
But I did this. That's funny. I did the same thing, and I was getting that into the weeds, trying to figure out, you know, where the votes should go. Anyway, baseball family, we want to know who you think the number one, two, three, and four names are in franchise history, and you can do that by mentioning their names in the comments. Play along with us, and you can pause this and take a minute and see if you agree with us or not, or go ahead and hand jam some names on your napkin right now. But here's what we're going to do. The team has operated under two different names throughout the franchise's ownership. They were an expansion team in 69. They were in Seattle. They were the Seattle Pilots. That lasted about as long as a
cup of coffee.
That's what I was going to say. I just couldn't find a way to word it just right. It was very short. Which is sad, but also brought the Milwaukee Brewers into existence. Now, they
were paved the way for the Mariners.
Exactly. So don't get it confused. The Braves were in Milwaukee until like 60 four, I think he's 64. And then Milwaukee was without a franchise for a while when the Braves moved to Atlanta. Seattle Pilots were formed in 69. They came into Milwaukee, I think.
In 70.
Yeah.
They were only in Seattle for 1 year.
Yeah.
And Seattle really holds on tight to the
Pilots. Yeah, clearly, because look at your hat.
Despite everything being in Milwaukee, holding on tight to the Pilots. And so my dad actually went to one of the Pilots games.
Really?
In Seattle. Yeah. And it was free bat day. And so they gave out full-size wood bats.
Yeah.
And it stuck around our house long enough that I was able to use that bat playing neighborhood games with my friends.
Oh, that's cool.
A long time. It was around for a really long time.
I like that. So technically, the franchise has been around for 55 seasons. They've been in Milwaukee under the name the Brewers for 54 seasons. And their record over that time is a 486 win-loss percentage. That's an official 4,215 wins to 4,461 losses. Playoff appearances are tallied at 9. That includes this season. They have won one pennant in that time. They have appeared in one World Series. That was 1982. They lost to the St. Louis Cardinals in what is considered the Suds Series due to the beer rivalries between Anheuser-Busch, which owned the St. Louis Cardinals at the time, and then all the, obviously, Miller being from Milwaukee and other companies, other beer manufacturers in Milwaukee. So the Sud Series, in 1982, they lost Cardinals. Winningest manager in Brewers franchise history is Craig Counsell. We've talked about that before, specifically dealing with his departure from Milwaukee and across the pond to the Cubs, which is still fascinating to me. Craig Counsell won 707 games as the manager and lost 625. That puts him at a 531 win-loss percentage. And that is the history so far of the Milwaukee Brewers as it appears on paper. Okay.
Yeah. Let me get into the team name real quick, Brig. I feel like it's pretty self-explanatory, right, with the Brewers. But this is really interesting on teamnameorigin.com. It says teams had been using the Brewers nickname off and on since the late 1800s. This is a nod to the numerous breweries that had called Milwaukee home. Like you talked about Miller and then Pabst and Schlitz as well.
Yeah.
And like you said, the Brewers started off in Seattle as the Pilots. They were just there for 1 year before packing up and heading over on to Milwaukee. So
I
think the Pilots comes from the fact that Boeing is based in Seattle. I think that's where that comes from.
Makes sense.
Or the ship Pilots. I don't know. I would think it's the Boeing Pilots, though.
I would imagine
based on the logo.
All right, Brad, I want to see why don't you kick it off? And this is in no particular order, baseball family. We're not ranking them or putting one in front of the other, any sort of importance here,
right?
Just that these are the four names. So do you want to overlap really quick? Go ahead and go first.
Okay, well, I'm gonna throw out one of my favorite baseball people ever as my number one. You can't talk about the Brewers without talking about Bob Uecker.
Yeah.
Right. The best personality in baseball, especially ever. In sports radio. I love one thing I particularly love about him is his self-deprecating humor about baseball, about not being a good baseball player, even though he made it to the big, so he had to been good to some degree, right?
Yeah, right.
And one of his famous quotes is the best way to catch a curveball or the best way to catch a knuckleball is to let it stop rolling and pick it up. I absolutely agree with him as a catcher that is the absolute best way to pick up or to catch a knuckleball because it's really the only way you can do it. But this is the thing. This is one of the reasons you have to have him on the Brewers Mount Rushmore because he has been the radio broadcaster with this team since 1971.
Yeah.
He made his debut in Milwaukee with the Braves in 62. Mm-hmm. But he's stuck around in Milwaukee. He's been with the Brewers since almost the very beginning. He's still there. He's 89 years old. If you have not listened to Bob Uecker call a baseball game, hop on the MLB app, right? And I think you can get radio games on radio for free.
Yeah.
And listen to a Brewers game. Listen to a Bob Uecker broadcast because it's a good old time.
It's
not fun.
And it's iconic. It's absolutely iconic. And the thing that's cool about Bob Uecker, he is also the first name on my list. he played for the Milwaukee franchise when they – he played in Milwaukee when they were the Milwaukee Braves, I should say, in 62 and 63. So he must just love it in Milwaukee, which is super cool. I think the cool thing about him –
Well, he's from Milwaukee, is part of it. He's born in Milwaukee.
Okay, there it is. That's why. I didn't take the time to look. I should have. everybody calls him Uke. So if you ever hear that, it's not ukulele. It's Bob Uecker. Bob Uecker, he has transcended the franchise. He has transcended baseball. His personality is so big and it's so fun that it's like when he was the radio broadcaster in Major League, in the film Major
League. I was just going to say that, yeah.
Like, he was one of the best parts of the entire film for all sorts of reasons. And it was like when, for the less avid baseball fan, the analogy I will make is it's like when Bob Barker showed up in Happy Gilmore, right? This became bigger than it should have, right? Than we thought. Well, and
for a long time, I thought he was the Indians radio broadcaster because of Major League.
For sure. Totally.
Harry Doyle. I didn't know that he was actually Bob Uecker. I thought his real name was Harry Doyle for a long time. Yeah. And then finally my mom was like, it's Bob Uecker.
Yeah, come on, dude. I didn't know either. I also
from Mr. Belvedere.
Did you know though that there are two statues of Bob Uecker outside Miller Park?
As there should be.
Two. Like, we're gonna talk about the people's names, the personalities that you cannot leave out of the conversation of the franchise history. And there are two statues of this man outside Miller Park. Forget about it.
If you're gonna have a number one on the Mount Rushmore, it feels like it's him.
I would say
because of that, I feel like.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, overlapped on one. Check. Go ahead with your next one, Brig.
All right. I'm going to get back onto the field with this one.
Okay.
This guy is in the Hall of Fame. He has won a Gold Glove and two MVPs. He played in two different, completely different positions inside the same franchise at shortstop and then in the outfield.
He almost split time between them two.
And you believe that?
Between
Isn't that character. Amazing?
Yeah.
And his offensive numbers were better once he went into the outfield. It's insane. So we're talking about Robin Yount. I'm just going to quit teasing and tell you. Robin Yount, his number is retired by the franchise, and he played his entire career with Milwaukee Brewers. He is the only player in the entire franchise history to have played his entire career with the franchise and have his number retired. There are other guys with their numbers retired, but not all of them spent their entire career in Milwaukee. I think that's really an important detail. Mm-hmm. He is the only player in that category in franchise history. He was there for the 1982 World Series appearance. In that season, he hit 331, 210 hits, 46 doubles. I can read my handwriting. I can read them. He led the league in hits with 210. He led the league in doubles with 46, 29 home runs, 114 RBIs, led the league in OPS with 957. He is the franchise leader in games played, runs, hits, RBIs, and more. I got to give it to Robin Yount.
Definitely. So this is the one thing that stuck out to me. You talked about how he played. So he started his career at shortstop, and then he later transitioned to the outfield. And I was, because I saw on the top of his baseball reference page, it says shortstop and center fielder. I was like, okay, so how much center field did he actually play? He played a whole lot because he played 1,479 games at shortstop, and in the outfield, he played 1,218. So that's really like a season and a half difference between the two. And then he had time at the DH position. And he had 12 games at first base, kind of toward the end of his career. I guess there's a couple games in the middle, but I'm sure that happens. It's just like giving the dude some rest, because I'm pretty sure his back hurt from carrying this team for all those years. The dude won 2 MVPs.
That's crazy.
For a team that made one World Series appearance, not just in his career, but in franchise history, the fact that he was able to get 2 MVPs out of it. Robin Yount is a name that I have heard over the years, and people talk all Robin Yount, but I never had actually taken the time to look up the magnitude of his career until I was prepping for this episode.
Yeah.
And the dude was amazing. Like, was a legitimate stud on this team. And I'm sure the reason they kept him around is because they're like, we have to. We absolutely have to keep him around to do everything.
Well, and not only that, but so he spent his entire, 20-year career or whatever in Milwaukee, because he was a full-time big leaguer at age 18.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. He made his debut at 18. He was 18 so he years old and 201 days.
Yeah, he was 18. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And to be an immediate contributor, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. So looking down his stat sheet, because I didn't see when he had made his debut from the beginning. And I was like, oh, played 20 years with Milwaukee, thinking, okay, he probably wrapped it up like 41. No, his last season was his age 37 season.
Yeah. No, if you want a blueprint of how to do it, just do that way. Like whatever he did. That's probably the right way to go.
It's amazing. I love it so much.
Yeah, I do too. All right, man. Okay.
All right. You ready for our next overlap? It's going to be a short episode.
Yeah, it is.
The next one I have is Paul Molitor. Because you have to.
Happens every time. I'm telling you. So also in the Hall of Fame.
So Paul Molitor spent of his 21 years in the big leagues, another guy who debuted pretty young though. I mean, he was 21 when he debuted, right? 21. Yeah. Yep. Of his 21 years in the big leagues, he spent 15 of them in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, me being the age that I am, I think of Paul Molitor, I think of Minnesota, because he was in Minnesota 96, 97, 98 when waking up on Saturday mornings in the summer, watching SportsCenter for 3 hours and seeing Paul Molitor on Twins highlights.
For sure. Right?
And I had a whole raft of Paul Molitor baseball cards. I knew he played in Toronto. I knew he played in Milwaukee because I also had Paul Molitor baseball cards from those years. But most of what I had was in Minnesota.
Right.
And so that part, for me, though, I feel like that shows like how myopic my perspective of his career is, and that his best years really were in Milwaukee. And granted, it was like his early to mid 30s where he kind of strung together 4 all-star seasons. But I mean, he led the league in runs in 1982, 1987, 1991, all with Milwaukee. He led the league in doubles in 1987, led the league in hits in 91 in Milwaukee, triples in 91 in Milwaukee. And a guy like that, a guy who played Paul Molitor's style, is never going to win an MVP, but he was runner-up in Rookie of the Year. He had 2-3 top 10 MVP finishes. One of those was a runner-up with Toronto in 93, you know? Like you said, Hall of Famer, and he absolutely has to be a Hall of Famer, because he put together such a steady career for so long. Great steady career for so long that there's no way you couldn't put that dude in the Hall of Fame.
So he led the American League back when the Brewers were in the American League. He led the American League in 5 different categories at least once, according to some of the research. And this is what kills me. Almost 2,300 hits as a Brewer in that 15-year time period, and like 400 stolen bases in that time period.
Because the Paul Molitor we know is not a speed demon.
Yeah, you're right. And we're like, looking at the data, I was like, wow. It's pretty awesome.
It is. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah.
Did I ever tell you I met him?
No.
Yeah, I went for a journalism conference when I was in college. Went to Minnesota.
Yeah.
And went at university. It was held at the University of Minnesota. And part of it, since I was in the sports writing section, we got to go cover a Twins game at Target Field. And right. He was the manager at the time. And after the game, like, we had press passes, so we could go wherever we wanted. And yeah. So after the game, we went down to the clubhouse. We went down into his office, talked to him and Urban Santana.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, after the game. So that was pretty sweet. It's awesome.
Very, very cool.
All right, go ahead. Next overlap, Brig. I've got one left. You've got one left.
It's
probably
going to
be the same guy.
I wonder. I'll be a little surprised if it is, and I'll be a little surprised if it's not. You know,
okay.
Kind of right there in the middle. So this is a guy that worked at his dad's Ford car dealership for a period of time. And during his tenure at his dad's Ford dealership, he sold Joe Torre his first car.
Makes sense.
This guy, there would not be baseball in Milwaukee without Bud Selig. And before he was a commissioner of baseball, is that yours? Before he was a commissioner of baseball, he owned the Milwaukee Brewers for about three lifetimes. And yeah. In the research I did, he began advocating to bring an expansion team into Milwaukee before the Milwaukee Braves left for Atlanta. He knew it was coming. Because he was involved in the transactions, he had a partial ownership of the Milwaukee Braves at the time. And so because he was in on what was going on and kind of saw the writing on the wall, heard the conversations, he started campaigning and raising funds. When they moved, he sold his shares. And then it took him another handful of years, like 4 or 5 years, to get the capital together. And during that time, he coordinated with Major League Baseball to host exhibition games in Milwaukee and do a number of different, you know, goodwill tour type promotional events and things like mm-hmm. that to prove that Milwaukee could continue to sustain a Major League franchise. And so after the Pilots folded in Seattle, he said, well, there we go. Here's our chance. And he pulled them over. And there really, truly would not be baseball in Milwaukee without Bud Selig.
Right, exactly right. Yeah, and that's really the thing, is that he's the man who saved baseball in Milwaukee. And you can say what you want about his time as the commissioner, right?
Well said. Time.
Because yeah. Because there were some good, obviously some bad during that time. And we've heard David Sampson talk about how Bud Selig was not what kind of Machiavellian, right? As a as a commissioner, and Rob Manfred is not that way. You know, so there were things about Bud Selig, like the way he ran things, that maybe a little bit questionable, but the fact that he got it done. He, like you said, baseball is in Milwaukee and continues to be in Milwaukee and thrives in Milwaukee because yeah. he laid the foundation for it. Baseball may have honestly been in a better place at the end of his tenure as commissioner than it is now. It kind of feels that way sometimes.
There's a strong argument. They're, even with the scandal of now of which there have been two, right? They each have their own now, if we're talking about Manfred and Selig.
Yeah.
We should talk about that in a different episode, because I bet you a comparison left-right would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really would be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, he's definitely a guy you have to have on the Mount Rushmore. Should we see what Chat GPT said about?
Yeah, I really want to know.
Okay.
I've been waiting this whole time.
So this is something we decided we wanted to try to do with these Mount Rushmore episodes now, is that we would give our thoughts, and then we would ask ChatGPT, see what the interwebs think about who belongs on the Mount Rushmore. So I said, please list the Mount Rushmore for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team. I say please every time I use ChatGPT, just in case, Brig.
Just in case.
You never know.
I don't. I maybe reconsider my
life. You want to get on the right side of the robots, Brig, just in case. So this is who ChatGPT said. said Robin Yount, a Hall of Famer who spent his entire career with the Brewers. Yount was a two-time MVP and an integral part of the team's history. Absolutely 100% agree with that. Paul Molitor, another Hall of Famer and a key player for the Brewers in the 1980s, contributing greatly to their success during that era. Commissioner Bud Selig, while not a player, Bud Selig played a crucial role in keeping baseball in Milwaukee and was instrumental in bringing the Brewers to the city in 1970. Later, he became the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Now, this is where we differ. You and I were 4 for 4. Yeah. However, ChatGPT, having no legitimate opinions or its own thoughts,
went with in the fight.
Ryan Braun.
Oh, no.
Despite some controversies, Braun remains one of the most significant players in recent Brewers history, having won awards and achieved notable milestones with the team. Now, that first part, despite some controversies, that's why I didn't put him on the Mount Rushmore.
Same. And I think it's worth talking about that. Baseball family, just in case you didn't know, maybe you're new to the show, maybe you don't, you know, don't agree with this. I don't know. I don't have any idea. But we are all the way against the PED thing.
Like, big time, yeah.
I'm so sorry, but I. Well,
and the thing, and so this is the thing, is that I've gotten to a point where I can somewhat, like, for like a team's Mount Rushmore, I could probably forgive the PED, right? If it was just that, but the fact that Ryan Braun not just lied about it, he ruined a man's career while lying about it. That he blamed the tester and the handler, said all these, that he did all these things wrong, and it was a false positive, and this is why, because of what this man did. Had him, got him fired, ruined his career, everything like that. And then, as it turns out, he was positive. That was all a lie. He tested positive the entire time. But he got guys like Aaron Rodgers was like swearing on his career to defend Ryan Braun.
I know.
You know, all these people were coming out of the woodwork like, I know this guy. There's no way. Well, it turns out you don't know him at all.
Right. We're not well enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's an argument for Ryan Braun, and there's a number of arguments, but as soon as I'm like, nope, sorry, man.
Cause I mean, you look at the Brewers franchise page, and he's what, like number 3 in WAR all time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Behind Yount and Molitor, it's Ryan Braun.
Yeah.
And so I get the argument. I absolutely understand the argument because he spent his whole career there as well and had a great career. We know why.
See, there it is. I can't go there. Can't let myself go there. I don't have any problem with anybody else going there, but you know, I'm not doing it. I can't.
Right. Yeah, no.
I draw a line somewhere.
And that's why I didn't include him.
Yeah, same. Same.
Thank you, ChatGPT, for sparking some conversation.
Yeah. Baseball family, what do you think though? We want to know, do you think despite the controversy, as ChatGPT said, that Ryan Braun actually does belong on the Milwaukee Brewers Mount Rushmore? Is that a name? And this is where the argument, I think, gets more interesting semantically. Is that a name you cannot talk about the franchise without mentioning? It's an interesting question. Let us know what you think.
Absolutely. But baseball family, don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you can, especially here on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button down below and also give us a little like as well. It helps us more than you know. So we would greatly appreciate it if you did. Also, we're taking some time off in December.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you up to date on that. Follow us on social media and we'll give you updates as to when we're not doing episodes. And some of them will be previously recorded as well. So
yeah, we always have some stuff every December. That's like gifts and, you know, what we're asking for from Baseball Santa and all that stuff's still going to happen. Don't worry about that, but
it will.
As far as current events and things, we might have to catch up in January. We'll see.
We'll do a news dump in January. How's that?
Yeah. That sounds all right. Great.
Well, baseball family, thank you so much for joining us this week. We will catch you sometime.